Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends, and welcome. Welcome to the Bill Press Pod, where at least once a week we dive into the big topics facing us as Americans. Today, the ever-important topic of U.S.-Israeli relations. Ever since 1948, when President Harry Truman recognized the new state of Israel, the relationship between the United States and Israel has been a very special one. Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, has been the best friend of the United States, and the United States, in turn, under both Democratic and Republican presidents, has been the number one ally of Israel. But that relationship today appears to be strained. Peace talks are on hold, dispute over West Bank settlements are unresolved, and President Trump is doing his best to divide support for Israel along partisan political lines. Well, we check on where things stand today in a very special, a joint podcast with two longtime leaders in the field of the U.S.-Israeli relations from the organization Americans for Peace Now. Deborah Shushan is Director of Policy and Government Relations at Americans for Peace Now. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for having us.
Good to see you. And Ori Neer is Director of Communications and Public Engagement for Americans for Peace Now and host of their podcast, Peacecast. Hi, Ori. Welcome.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for inviting us. Our podcast is available on all the platforms, and it's a podcast that focuses on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and efforts to resolve it. As far as I know, it's the only one that has this specific focus.
Very good, and good to have you both here. Let me just ask, back up and start. What is the mission of Americans for Peace Now? When were you started? What are your goals? What's the organization all about?
Okay, so we are the sister organization of Israel's peace movement, Shalom Achshav, Peace Now. Americans for Peace Now was started in the early 80s, just several years after Peace Now was started. Peace Now started in 1978, or 77 actually, when the president of Egypt at the time, Anwar Sadat, extended his hand in peace to Israel. The Israeli establishment, political and military, was reluctant, and a group of Israeli officers, military officers, gathered together and put pressure in the form of an open letter on then Prime Minister Menachem Begin to reciprocate and sign peace with Egypt. We know that the rest is history, as they say. Israel did sign a peace agreement with Egypt. That movement, that nucleus of retired Israeli officers, morphed into a peace movement called Shalom Achshav, Peace Now. Americans for Peace Now started as a friends of in the early 80s and then developed into an independent American Jewish organization that advocates and educates for Israeli-Palestinian peace.
Right. What is the status of the peace movement today, both in Israel and here in the United States, Deborah?
Well, the peace movement in Israel is still alive and kicking. It's not... as strong as it was when it was a mass movement that began, as Ori indicated, in the late 1970s, and was able to mobilize really significant numbers of Israelis to come out in the streets and push for peace with Egypt and an end to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. After many years at this point, I mean, since Begin came to power in 1977, for the vast majority of that time up until now, Israel has been under right-wing rule. And there are many reasons that we could talk about, but in part because of that, we've seen a diminution in the strength of the Israeli peace movement, but it certainly very much still exists. Both in our sister organization, Peace Now, and other left-wing peace organizations in left-wing and not just left-wing, mm-hmm. we should say, peace organizations in Israel. We here at Americans for Peace Now feel that it is extremely important for progressives in the United States to support our natural allies in Israel. So when we talk about U.S.-Israeli relations, what we want to do is to empower progressives, voices that support peace in Israel at a time, you know, that's extremely difficult for them. I think here in the United States, particularly in the era of Donald Trump, we are seeing a real resurgence in terms of particularly the Jewish community and their willingness to speak out against the Netanyahu government. And our position would be that the best way to do that would be to work together with and empower those of our natural allies in Israel who are, you know, who are working against extremely difficult conditions.
Well, that raises an interesting question, right? I mean, ask both of you, Ari, is it okay to criticize the politics or the policies of Benjamin Netanyahu?
I think it's more than okay. I think it's an imperative.
For an American to do
it. For an American to do it, for an American Jew to do it, for anyone who cares about Israel's future, because I think that Netanyahu is taking Israel in directions that are destructive and disastrous. So to criticize Israel and to criticize publicly Israel, to criticize the government of Israel, yes, the right. leader of Israel, is definitely something that is, I think, the right thing to do, the responsible thing to do.
Well, Deborah, I remember being in Israel. I was stunned to see the level of criticism publicly, openly, strongly in the Israeli press.
Oh.
I mean, they're pretty wild, right? I mean, even more so than the U.S. press.
Absolutely.
Against a U.S. president.
I mean, Uri is actually the better person to speak up because he's actually a longtime Israeli journalist. So he would be a great person to speak out on this. And he can talk more about it. I would just say that, A, you're right. B, Netanyahu is doing everything he can to try to undermine that free press. But I do want to go back to your original question. Is it okay for an American to criticize Israel? And Ori responded, you know, of course, I agree with what Ori said, that it's imperative. And he mentioned it's imperative, particularly for American Jews. But, you know, it's easier for us as American Jews to criticize Israel and the Israeli government because our, you know, while Donald Trump would criticize our, you know, question our loyalty, he's obviously, you know, not afraid to go there.
No, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But, you know, the fact that, for example, Bernie Sanders is more vociferous in his criticism of the Israeli government, I think, you know, partly has to do with Bernie and his ideology. But there is something interesting there that the one, you know, Jewish candidate in the race is clearly the most critical. And, you know, and the way that he's been doing it is to say, I'm Jewish. I have family in Israel. I worked on a kibbutz. But my point is, it's not only okay for Jews, for American Jews to criticize, for Israelis, for American Jews, to criticize the Israeli government. It is okay and imperative, period. I was recently on a talk program. One of the fellow guests was a Palestinian American activist named Omar Badar, who works at the Arab American Institute. And within short order, he was accused by one of the Israeli guests of being an anti-Semite because he used the word occupation. And he mentioned the fact that the United States gives Israel billions of dollars of aid a year. I mean, these things are incontestable. They are simply facts. And that's absolutely wrong. I feel fortunate that I was there as an American Jew to basically say, hey, that's ridiculous. It is absolutely not okay to call him an anti-Semite because he mentions facts. You know, and I think, again, as Jews, we have a certain privilege in that regard. But I think it's incumbent on everyone, on all presidential candidates, for example, to speak truth. And to know that it's okay and incumbent upon them to criticize the Israeli government.
Couldn't one, I'm not an expert in this area, but couldn't one also make the point that being a Palestinian, he is also a Semite? No, isn't that
true? I thought so. That is true.
So, Ori, you didn't hold back, right? But as Deborah gets to, it's become almost a cliche now that anybody criticizes Netanyahu, they're accused of being anti-Semitic.
I know, and that's
I've had that happen to me as a commentator.
We have to break this. When you asked me the question initially, I almost answered with a question of myself: is it okay to criticize Bolsonaro in Brazil? He is perpetuating fires that are damaging the globe. Netanyahu, as far as I'm concerned, is perpetuating a political fire that is damaging the interest of the entire world in the Middle East between Israelis and Palestinians. You should criticize it. It's the wrong thing to do. That's it. And then once there is there's enough criticism, enough international outrage at this, it will actually dilute, I think, the wrong argument that criticizing Israel is akin to anti-Semitism.
So is support for Israel a Republican or a Democratic issue?
Support, I think that support for Israel is a bipartisan issue. I think that everyone should support Israel.
I always thought it was until recently. Go ahead.
It should be. I'm a dual citizen. I'm an Israeli patriot. I love Israel. I go there 3 times a year. I live in the United States now. My family is there. My friends are there. I love Israel. I love the principles. I love the ideals upon which it was established. I know that there is still a great deal of love here in the United States for those ideals and for what Israel should be. And I would love to see that grow. Unfortunately, there are forces in Israel who are blocking that, who are working day and night in order to diminish that kind of affinity that I think the people of the United States have for Israel and the ideals upon it upon which it was established.
So of course I'm getting to the fact that Donald Trump particularly is now trying to make this a partisan issue, and we know how he said it. We've heard it so many times when he talked about this disloyalty.
In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel. And only weak people would say anything other than that.
So I don't want to assume too much, Deborah, but I might guess that sometime in your lifetime you might have voted as an American Jew for a Democrat. What do you think when Donald Trump says you're being disloyal to Israel, disloyal to America, or you're just totally ignorant?
Well, without revealing anything about my personal politics, I should mention that that APN is a nonpartisan organization.
Yes, yes.
But it is, we know that 70-80% of American Jews vote for the Democratic Party. In the 2018 midterms, it was 79% voted for Democratic candidates in congressional mm-hmm. races. So basically, we just heard Donald Trump call roughly 80% of the American Jewish population disloyal. And that's absolutely, absolutely shocking. I mean, to call any American population, Jewish or otherwise, disloyal, for an American president to do that, is mind-blowing. And we should add what's amazing here is that we've seen Democratic politicians attacked for perpetuating anti-Semitic tropes, including the well-known dual loyalty trope, right, that says that Jews cannot be loyal to the country in which they are citizens. They are, they're inherently rootless cosmopolitans, either loyal to some sort of transnational movement or to Israel. So we've heard, attacks against Democratic politicians, specifically, obviously, I'm talking about Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib. And here we see the president of the United States clearly embracing the dual loyalty trope in a way that we never saw from those two Democratic congresswomen. And it's just absolutely mind-boggling. And you might want to get into this, but let me just say that the target audience for that was not American Jews, right? No. This is not an effort to try to win over more American Jews who are 2% of the population of the United States to support Donald Trump. We are not the target audience for that kind of mm-hmm. attack.
Yeah. No, I know, and you're indicating whom he's after, Ori. He's
evangelicals.
It's clearly American evangelicals.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And that's one of the things that's so enraging about this. I have to say, we would have been as enraged and as offended if a Democratic president would have said that about Republicans, Jews for voting Republican. This is something that we, as Americans who are advocating for support for Israel and for peace for Israel, we are one of the main issues that we're concerned about is that this maintain a bipartisan issue, a non-political issue, or a non-partisan issue. So the fact that he, as Deborah said, not only partisanized it, political in terms of political partisanship, but also made this, you know, bowed back to evangelicals in such a crude way is really incredibly offensive.
One thing that I've never understood is that the evangelical support for Israel and Israeli acceptance of their support, you know. To me, there's a contradiction here because the evangelicals really, when I read them and listen to them, they really want Armageddon to happen soon because that means the rapture will happen when all those who believe in Christ will rise up to heaven. But those who don't, including Jews, will be left behind to burn and be destroyed. I mean, what's the connection here? And why don't the Israelis or Jews understand that and reject that?
It's really interesting. I mean, I'm familiar with the Israeli debate about this issue. And on the Israeli political arena, for a lot of years, there was a debate of whether to make common cause with evangelicals or not. One school said we should wholeheartedly. They support us. Let's accept them. Who cares about their, you know?
Who cares about their rapture?
Yeah, Who cares about their religious agenda? We're non-religion.
In the end, we'll see who's right.
Yeah, right. You go up or you don't.
Exactly.
Right?
And the other school said, "Hey, not so quickly. This is a very touchy thing. This is a very sensitive thing. You should be careful about who you go to bed with." And to my regret, the former rather than the latter is now prevailing in Israel, and it's very dangerous. I think very dangerous.
It's not just an Israeli government decision. One thing that I found very interesting in the last couple of years, part of my job at APN is to attend the annual APAC policy conference. And I found it fascinating to see the way that APAC, which is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the biggest, strongest, most well-known pro-Israel lobby of a very, I would say, certainly conservative hue. Their mandate is to support the policies of the Israeli government. The way that they have wholeheartedly made common cause with evangelical Christians, it's been fascinating when I've gone to those policy conferences to go to panels that are devoted entirely to Christian evangelical support for Israel, and in fact, I've asked questions. I see as part of my role to be a troublemaker and ask questions. And I've asked these Christian Zionists, what about Christian Palestinian populations in both in Israel, in the occupied territories? What about the way that they are discriminated against by the Israeli government? Does this trouble you? And it doesn't. Dispensationalism, their own brand of Christian theology, overrides everything. It's fascinating and not particularly good for the Jews, ultimately.
Right. And Jim Jeffress, I think that's how you pronounce his name, one of the evangelical ministers, was invited by President Trump. Benjamin Netanyahu was right there to speak at the opening of the new U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the main proponents of the rapture.
Oh, absolutely.
Theory.
And not only him, you also had Pastor John Hagee as well,
right,
who is the head of what is actually the biggest pro-Israel organization, I should say, the biggest pro-Israel organization in the country now is not an American Jewish organization. It's CUFI, Christians United for Israel. which has grown explosively. It's only about 10 years old, and it is now, you know, it's got millions of members, because obviously there's a much bigger Christian evangelical population to draw from in this country than a Jewish one.
Before we take a break, in talking about what we might term phony anti-Semitism, there are evidence of an real incidence of real dangerous anti-Semitism in this country today. That must concern you as well.
Definitely. And we see it all over, and it's something that is threatening. And one of the things that's
Charlottesville comes to mind.
One of the things that is Pittsburgh. Threatening about it, and that is where, unfortunately, I see the government of Israel playing into this, is the new hybrid politics that put together religion and politics. And that's one of the things that worries me the most about evangelicals, going back to that topic for a moment, is not just the symbolics of it and, you know, the foreign ideology and so on. It's the bringing the religious content into politics and into decision making. For many years, the Israeli government was very pragmatic and took decisions on the basis of pragmatism, what is security, what is, you know, international relations and things like that. Today, more and more, and a great part of it is because of opening the door to religious extremists, both Jewish and Christian here in the United States, is the marring of the political decision making by religious content.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a wall in this country called the separation of church and state, which is aimed at preventing that, of course.
Here it's porous in Israel, it doesn't exist.
Right. It's a good way to put it.
I want to say a word about this real anti-Semitism, which, I mean, I come from a family. My mother's side of the family was wiped out in the Holocaust. My grandparents were Holocaust survivors. My mom was born in a displaced persons camp in Germany after the war. For me, having grown up in the United States and having been so blessed with the absence of any of that kind of experience that, you know, that my grandparents went through, to see a resurgence of, and let's be clear, it's white nationalist anti-Semitism in the United States that has led to multiple shootings in synagogues since Donald Trump became president, is absolutely terrifying. And let's be really clear that these people have been these terrorists have been encouraged and inspired by our president from the White House. And getting back to this, you know, to the U.S.-Israel issue, I think what is an addition on this that is so upsetting to American Jews is that Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government have seen it as their job to try to absolve Donald Trump for any responsibility for what's going on in the United States. And I refer you, after the massacre in the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, who greeted Donald Trump when he went to pay his respects? Was it a member of the American Jewish community? No, the American Jewish community had no interest in fact, the majority of American Jews assigned Donald Trump responsibility for what happened there. It was the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer, who greeted the president when he showed up in Pittsburgh. And when you have those massacres in Pittsburgh, in Poway, in California.
So the official state government of Israel, basically, blessing Donald Trump.
Blessing Donald Trump, right? Rather than speaking out against anti-Semitism in the United States, the flames of which are fanned by Donald Trump, you in fact have Netanyahu with his extremely close and totally dysfunctional relationship with Donald Trump, basically trying to absolve him of any responsibility. And we saw that as well with the disloyalty comments. Was there any attempt by the Israeli government, by Netanyahu or otherwise, to say, listen, good friend Donald Trump, you are way out of line? Absolutely not. Nothing.
It's an incestuous relationship, and involved in this is the other ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to Israel. I hope we'll have a chance to talk about that too, because there's a real danger here.
Let me just interrupt you and say we will. Okay. But right now, we got to take a break. We'll take a quick break. And we're talking today with Deborah Shushan from Americans for Peace Now and Ori Neer from Americans for Peace Now. And we're brought to you today by the American Federation of Government Employees, the good men and women of the AFGE under President J. David Cox. They're the good people who keep our federal agencies running both here in Washington, D.C. and around the country day in and day out. They're there to serve us, proud to get up and work for America every day. We thank them for their good work, for all their good work for this country, and for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And we're back with Deborah Shushan and Ori Neer from Americans for Peace Now. Yeah, let's talk about Ambassador David Friedman. Checking your website, I know that you, as an organization, opposed his nomination by Donald Trump. He was confirmed. He is now there. Why did you oppose him, and how do you rate his performance since he's been our ambassador in Israel? Who starts?
Yeah, Ori, so
Deborah can't wait to chime in.
Exactly. So we'll do it together. We opposed him because of what he did and what he said before he became ambassador, which is absolutely shocking. I mean, if you look at his track record, he had a column in a Jewish newspaper in the United States, and he has written prolifically about the conflict, about Israel. His views are really to the right of Attila the Hun. They are really, I'm not exaggerating, they are more right-wing than the most right-wing Israeli party in the Knesset. I'm not exaggerating. And this man was nominated to be the United States ambassador to Israel. He squeaked through confirmation hearings in the Senate and then became ambassador. And I'm now going to hand it to my colleague, Deborah, who will talk a little bit about his track record since becoming ambassador and how we document it.
Right. So let me just say, in terms of those confirmation
hearings, which you can find out if you go to the website for Americans for Peace.
Thank you for the plug.
All right. So thank you for the plug. So okay, since you've just given us a plug on that, I would encourage anyone listening to go to our website, peacenow.org, and look for the Friedman file. And you will find an extensive documentation. We have their documentation of all these significant milestones, things that David Friedman has done as ambassador. And you'll also find, if you scroll all the way to the bottom, we have documented key things that David Friedman said before he became ambassador, which informed Americans mm-hmm. for Peace Now's decision to oppose him in the first place. But so to talk a little bit, David Friedman, when he was confirmed, had to walk back nearly everything that he stood for before before he became nominated to be ambassador to Israel, so much so that a number of members of the Senate, this includes Bob Corker, who at that time was the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Menendez, the ranking member, said, you know, you're experiencing a conversion here, and we're seeing a nomination conversion. You seem to be walking back everything you've ever believed in, including, by the way, David Friedman had written quite explicitly about his distaste for the two-state solution, the establishment of a Palestinian state. And during his confirmation hearing, he said he thought that it was the best approach. I mean, he walked back everything in order to attain this goal of becoming U.S. ambassador to Israel. And since he has been ambassador, he has taken the bull. I mean, in some ways, you got to give the man kudos because he has taken the bull by the horns. He knows that he has, 4 years, maybe more, God forbid. But, you know, he's got 4 years to try to enact the agenda that he had spelled out quite Absolutely. Explicitly before he became ambassador. And he has worked methodically to make that happen. And as we see pundits pontificate about the Kushner plan, what will it contain? When will we see it? That is all a ridiculous distraction smokescreen because on the ground, David Friedman has been orchestrating implementation of his plan, which is to derail any possibility for a two-state solution ever being implemented, to make sure that a Palestinian state can never be established and that Israel will be able to solidify its control over at least significant portions, certainly the settlements, of what he would refer to as Judea and Samaria, in other words, the West Bank. And he has been extraordinarily effective, which is why we at Americans for Peace Now have gone to this extensive effort to document exactly what this one man, David Friedman, has been up to, because he is the mastermind of it all.
And he's doing it, of course, with the support of Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Ori, is the two-state solution dead or just dormant? And what kind of Israel do we have without a two-state solution?
The two-state solution is not dead. It's definitely dormant. I want to just reiterate something that Deborah said, because it was kind of folded into her comments here, and that is the U.S. policy on this two-state solution. I think that it's incredibly important to understand that what the Trump administration is trying to do is to reverse. They have shifted to reverse a policy that the United States has held since President Clinton of advancing the idea of an independent Palestinian state. They have shifted to reverse, and they're in full gas.
A policy adopted and supported by Republican and Democratic administrations.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And both administrations, Democratic and Republican, have tried hard to advance it. It is clear that this administration does not support it, and what they're trying to do is revolutionary. It's no less than revolutionary. It's really important to understand that all the talk about a peace plan is, as Deborah said, is smoke and mirrors. Now, to your question about the two-state solution, yes, the two-state solution is dormant. Every day that passes makes it more difficult to attain. I think it still is attainable, and I know that it's basically the only chance, the only real scenario that can bring real peace in the future between Israelis and Palestinians. And therefore, we as an organization are really redoubling our efforts to try to push for it.
And Deborah, is the proper role of the United States, we always thought that it was to be an, I think the phrase was, honest broker. That's gone for now. But is that what the proper role for the United States, as you see it, would be?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think the United States should be working to be an honest broker. I think the United States should pursue American national interests which call for peace between Israelis and Palestinians, which, as Ori said, will only come with a two-state solution. I do think that we should acknowledge as well, though. I mean, as much as two states have been U.S. policy under Democrats and Republicans for a very long time, the U.S. administration, what we're seeing now under the Trump administration, obviously, is absolutely extreme and is a move to abandon any desire or pretense to be even-handed. But, you know, I mean, have we seen the United States acting as an even-handed broker up until now? No. I mean, the United States has always put its thumb on the scales in favor of the Israelis over the Palestinians. And that's very problematic because Israel is the stronger party. And in order for Israeli-Palestinian peace, in order for there to be a two-state solution, the United States is going to have to put pressure on Israel as the stronger of the two parties. Not to say that Israel is at fault for everything. There's plenty of fault to be spread around. But, you know, let's be honest. Let's be realistic. Israel obviously is the stronger of two parties. Israel is the occupier. And we have had administrations in the past, including Republican administrations, especially, frankly, Republican administrations. I mean, if you look back at actions that were taken by the George H.W. Bush administration in regard to the loan guarantees, if you look at Reagan in terms of the way that President Reagan reacted when Israel annexed the Golan Heights, if you look at what the Eisenhower administration did during the Suez Crisis, we've had Republican administrations mm-hmm. that have exercised significant pressure on Israel. And what I think is concerning here, and I want to return to something that you talked about much earlier in the podcast, is this question of support for Israel as a partisan issue. And I think we have to revisit and examine what we mean by support for Israel. My concern is that increasingly, and particularly with the influence of evangelical Christians, support for Israel in the United States is increasingly defined as wholehearted
carte blanche
support for the policies of a right-wing Israeli government with absolutely no criticism. And this is revolutionary, right? I think back to Michael Oren when he was Israeli ambassador to the United States, and something that he said as ambassador, which is that there should be no daylight between the U.S. and Israel. But what he meant by that was that as close allies, any disagreement between the two parties should be expressed behind closed doors and not in public. Now, you can criticize that, but what's happening now is that we're taking that a step further to say that there can't even be disagreements between the U.S. and Israel, that their interests have to be exactly the same. It's not just an issue of disagreements can't even be expressed privately. They can't even exist. And when you have a right-wing Israeli government that is violating Israel's long-term interests in peace with the Palestinians, that's not in Israel's interest, and it's not certainly not in America's national interest.
I know we're just about the end of our time together, but I can't shut things up and move on without asking you, because you kind of raise the issue. There is an election coming up mm-hmm. within a couple of weeks, where the direction of Israeli politics inside Israel might change. What's going on, and how do you view it, and what's Americans for Peace Now doing about it?
So we should just put things in context really quickly. This is the second round mm-hmm. After one that was unsuccessful, in the sense that Prime Minister Netanyahu was incapable of putting together a coalition. That was in April. This is a kind of a second chance for him to do that.
A mulligan.
And yeah, exactly, mulligan, yeah. And therefore, there's much less interest in these elections. The Israeli public is tired. And I think that many other people who are following what mm-hmm. is happening in Israel are also tired of it. And that's a tragedy, because these elections are not really about the issues. They're not about the issues. And there are many issues besides the issue of peace that we focus on, which Israel has to deal with and has to pay attention to. This is really a certain, you know, this is all about Netanyahu. This is about Netanyahu's character and about his conduct and so on and so forth. I doubt it very much that these elections will bring about a change in the Israeli political scene, a change in government. Netanyahu is most likely to become prime minister again and put together a coalition. The main question will be whether he will put together a right-wing coalition as he had before, or put together a coalition together with a party called Blue and White, which is a centrist party that has really not shown its colors, although it's called Blue and White. We don't know exactly what it's about so far. And that's, I think, a pretty likely possibility.
Right.
I want to add...
Are you hopeful, Deborah?
Am I hopeful? Let me go back to the U.S.-Israel aspect of this here. What I'm very concerned about is both in Israel and in the United States and beyond, one of the things I'm very concerned about is what I see as a global recession in democracy, particularly under illiberal populist leaders like Donald Trump, like Benjamin Netanyahu. And what we're seeing in Israel, certainly in the context of the elections and before, is an assault on Israeli democracy, as imperfect as it is, by Benjamin Netanyahu, who is basically seeking to do things like attack the Supreme Court in order to basically stay out of jail with the corruption charges that he faces. Mm-hmm. He's very likely to be indicted on multiple counts of corruption. And that's not something that's just happening in Israel. I mean, we see attacks on democracy here under the Trump administration. We wake up to see that Prime Minister Boris Johnson is trying to shut down the British Parliament in order to shove through a no-deal Brexit. And I think that we have to speak truth here about what's going on. You know, we're not afraid to talk about, as progressives, we're not afraid to talk about Donald Trump attacking the very institutions of democracy in the United States. And we can't be afraid to talk about it with regard to Israel. So when American politicians, you know, you hear them in both parties, and rightly so, right? Talk about the shared values that undergird the U.S.-Israel relationship. Let's be clear that those shared values are under assault both here at home and in Israel. And let's see an end to these godforsaken APAC missions to Israel, where politicians genuflect and you act as though everything is perfect and Israeli democracy is thriving and wonderful. There are no problems. Let's speak truth. These same, certainly the Democrats on these trips would not in any way hesitate to talk about what Donald Trump is doing regarding democratic institutions in the United States. Why are they so unwilling to speak truth to our ally, the Israeli government and the Israeli people?
All right. And with that invitation at warning, and that's why we need the strong voices of Americans for Peace Now and Peace Now in Israel as well. Thank you so much, Deborah Shishan and Ori Neer, for joining us today. Thanks to the great work of Americans for Peace Now. And thanks to all of you for listening. And please, if you haven't already subscribed, do so right now. Just go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And subscribe to the Bill Press Pod. It's free. And while you're there, help us grow the podcast by giving us a big fat 5-star rating. And tell your friends to subscribe too. Again, this is a joint podcast with Peacecast, the podcast of Americans for Peace Now. So I have told people where they can find us. Ori Neer, the host of Peacecast. Your turn.
Yes. So we're on all the platforms, and it would be great if you rate us on the Apple app. And as I always say, with any kind of feedback or comments, please email me at onir@peacenow.org. Thank you very much, Bill, for hosting us and for doing this joint production, no, the co-production.
And a great conversation and a lot of valuable insights for me and for all of our listeners. So thank you again, Deborah and Ori. Thank you all for listening. We look forward to seeing you on the next edition of the Built Press Pod and the next edition of Peacecast.